Indiana to end statewide COVID-19 restrictions. COVID vaccine appointments opening to all, plus the new chair of the Indiana Democratic Party, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 26th, 2021.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Governor Eric Holcomb announced he will end the state's COVID-19 restrictions beginning April 6th. That means the day after the NCAA Division I Men's Basketball Championship is played here in Indiana, the state will no longer limit gatherings or require mask wearing. While the restrictions will be repealed April 6th, officials say vaccine wait times could be 6 weeks or more once eligibility is open to all next week. State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box says the science remains the same whether the state has a mask mandate or a mask-wearing advisory.
And we've been doing that for the most part across the state, wearing our masks to prevent the spread of this virus to other individuals and prevent ourselves from becoming infected.
Governor Holcomb says data, as it has throughout the pandemic, drove his latest decision.
We have the resources to care for those who are in need, meaning ICU beds, doctors, et cetera. We have a vaccine, three of them, as a matter of fact.
Still, Holcomb says this is not a mission accomplished, but a proceed with caution moment for the state. Is April 6th the right time to repeal COVID restrictions? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Arielle Brandy, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, Statehouse reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Arielle Brandy, is this the right call from Governor Holcomb?
I think absolutely not. I think the issue that we'll run in here is when it comes to small business owners, restaurant workers, and our hospitality workers, they now are going to have to make the decision based on their city or their county on whether or not they will be following these mask mandates, which requires them to do an extra amount of mask policing that they have been doing throughout this entire pandemic. And so I'm hoping that with the fact that the pandemic is not over and health restrictions are still happening, that Hoosiers will still make the decision to mask up regardless of the restrictions being dropped on April 6th.
Yeah, Governor Holcomb said that in his address. He said, I'm still going to wear a mask when I go out in public because it's the right thing to do. But aren't we running into the same problem we ran into when we were going to, like, stage five last year, which is no one from the state is saying the epidemic is over, the pandemic is over. No one is saying you don't have to wear a mask or social distance anymore. But aren't people just going to hear, well, the state's not requiring anything, so I'm going to do whatever. There are always those people, but isn't there a group in the middle? Isn't there a group in the middle who's going to say, well, if they're saying no restrictions, then I guess I'm fine?
Well, Democrats for a year now have said, well, there's really no mask mandate because it's unenforceable. He's not enforcing it. And now they're screaming, don't get rid of the mask mandate. So which is it? I think this is moving to its natural progression, which has been to take a year ago a statewide approach and then slowly move this to a local decision. What we don't have, what we didn't have at the time with stage five and that those easings was a vaccine. Where over 1 million people are vaccinated. We've moved ahead of schedule through these through the age groups that qualify for that, and now are in a position we can open it up to anybody that wants it. This idea that at some point in the near future someone's going to say the pandemic is over is really naive. I mean, we have to start thinking about this in terms of. People will die from COVID-19 forever, potentially. Certainly for the next several years, in part because we have a population. This isn't a Hoosier population. We have a global population that is skeptical of the vaccine, that may not want to take the vaccine for whatever reason. But we do need, for the very reasons for small business and our local communities, especially hospitality workers and people that have been on the kind of the lower run of the economic ladder a year ago to begin with, to get them back to work and open these things up safely. And we've proven we can do that. The NCAA tournament's a great example of that. I think there was still to date has been one game that was canceled and a handful of positive tests. So we've proven we can do these things safely, and we ought to start.
This announcement from the governor comes as there was momentum building in the General Assembly among Republicans to they were going to end the mask mandate if the governor didn't. The governor said Wednesday when asked that what lawmakers are doing has no impact on the decisions he's making. Do you believe him?
Of course not. Nothing happens in a vacuum. And COVID has affected everything political, and politics has affected all aspects of our response to COVID. The two are intertwined and will be. Think about every aspect of this fight against this pandemic, this scourge. It's largely been determined by what your political affiliation is, or your tribe, your belief, you know, whether masks are good, whether masks are bad, whether the governor should have extensive emergency powers, whether he should not. So to divorce it from the notion that he's operating in a court of not only public opinion but legislative action would be, I think, naive. He might have reached the same conclusion anyway, because now that everybody will have access, at least from age 16 up, to the vaccine, that is a game changer, as Mike suggests. So I think there is a fundamental difference. But I think we should be prepared realistically for a spike in cases, as we've seen in 20-some states now, where some of the mandates have been eased over in recent weeks.
To that point, if we do see a spike in cases, the governor has said, as he has all along, that he will adjust the situation according to the data. Do you think it's realistic to expect a statewide mask mandate ever again?
I don't think we would see that again. I mean, he's definitely keeping the public health emergency in effect so that he still has flexibility, so that some of the other changes to regulations that are popular and helpful still stay in place. But I can't imagine he would ever put it back in after he saw, you know, how badly lawmakers hated it. And also they're building in their own sort of backdoor to deal with it in the future if he did. They would, I think, immediately cancel it.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is April 6th the right time to end all statewide COVID-19 restrictions? A, yes. B, no, they should remain in place longer. Or C, no, they should have been lifted sooner. Last week we asked you, should Indiana open vaccine eligibility to all Hoosiers age 16 and older within the next 2 weeks, like neighboring states, like we're doing? 78% say yes, 22% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, speaking of, all Hoosiers age 16 and older can schedule COVID-19 vaccinations beginning March 31st. Governor Eric Holcomb announced the expansion in that statewide address this week. Many Hoosiers should expect long waits to get a COVID-19 vaccine when they become eligible to schedule appointments March 31st. That's because while the amount of vaccine doses Indiana will get next week is expected to increase by about 38%, there will be about 420% more Hoosiers eligible to get their shot. State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box acknowledges the crunch that will create.
Will our wait times, as far as will it take rather than 1 week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, maybe it would be 6 weeks? That is quite possible.
Box says the federal government has told Indiana to expect enough doses to vaccinate every Hoosier by May. Mike O'Brien, by widening this population so much so fast, without a corresponding increase of that size in the amount of vaccine we are going to get in Indiana, is the state setting Hoosiers up for frustration?
Potentially. I mean, Dr. Box alluded to that. I think what we have seen is, as this, again, to the acceleration of the accessibility and eligibility for this vaccine, what we've experienced is that older population, we had to take a much longer period of time to get them vaccinated. Well, we were setting up new distribution processes and all of that, but it was a population until you got to about age 50 that prioritized vaccination. I don't think you're going to, but we've been able to accelerate that because every age group that you get to, younger and younger, it's less of a urgency, just because they're less susceptible, the odds of dying from this are really low. But what it does do, opening this up to everybody, is what was criticized kind of from the beginning, which was frontline workers can't get in no matter what age they are. People that have underlying health issues, no matter what age they are, can't go in and aren't eligible for a vaccine. So it solves that problem. And those people that are at risk and understand that are going to make this a priority. But the uptake, I think, as the younger you get, is going to be really low.
Ariel is a fellow member of that new population that's about to become eligible. Are you happy that it's open to everybody, or a little frustrated that it didn't continue down that five-year, step ladder?
Well, I will say this. I think that regardless of the pandemic, it has been frustrating for all Hoosiers. And I think that at the end of the day, I'm grateful for the fact that now we have some leadership coming from the White House with President Joe Biden, allowing us to get to the point of having vaccinations for everyone. We had a lot of frustration in the state of Indiana when it came to only frontline workers having the opportunity to get vaccinated, but our teachers did not have that opportunity, and now they do. And so to be able to see young teachers that are my age now being able to step back into the classroom and be vaccinated, and people who are my age, whether they're susceptible to getting COVID and dying from it or not, I still am very grateful for the fact that we have had leadership from the Democrat side to be able to say, this is how many folks we're going to vaccinate, this is the timeline in which we're going to do it, and we're opening it up to the state of Indiana. We're way ahead of what some other states are. And so for us to be in this position, while it may be frustrating, I'm glad that we have the opportunity to be able to vaccinate all Hoosiers.
Nikki Kelly, realistically, if the governor was going to open or get rid of all the restrictions on April 6th, he couldn't keep the vaccine limited to certain
Absolutely.
Groups, right?
And honestly, one of the, I think, a fair criticism that I've heard is that if you are going to open it all up on March 31st, which we are, you know, give that at least a month for people to, A, get their appointments and then get their second shot so they are actually fully vaccinated before we drop the restrictions. And I think that is a fair conversation to have.
Going back to the last conversation, though, that is something that I've heard, too, from a lot of folks, which is, well, at least keep the restrictions in place until a lot of folks have the chance to get a vaccine. If Dr. Box is saying 6 weeks after March 31st to get an appointment. But were lawmakers going to let that go?
It gets back to what I was saying a moment ago. It's so politically charged, I think it would have been difficult, given the atmosphere in the State House right now with the General Assembly, if he had extended it further in terms of keeping the regimented phase in of the vaccinations with the five-year increments or whatever. There would have been and extended the mask accordingly. It would have been tough because, you have a good number of lawmakers who are uncomfortable. And Hoosiers will be, there will be pockets of the backlog and there will be frustration. But Hoosiers should remember that this state is still way ahead of a lot of others in terms of the notion of having one-stop clearinghouse. I've got relatives across the country who basically, they just kind of have to call around to different drugstores or grocers and figure out, A, if they have it, and then what their process is for signing up. Indiana, I think, is about one of maybe half a dozen states, according to the CDC, that actually has a legitimate clearinghouse of information. And so Hoosiers, when they're frustrated and they're at the back of the line, figuratively speaking, should at least take heart in that.
Well, new Indiana Democratic Party Chair Mike Schmuel says 2021 is a rebuilding year for the state party, likening the organization to a sports team that hasn't seen the playoffs for a while. Schmuel was elected to lead the party this week.
Indiana Republicans hold every statewide elected office and supermajorities in the General Assembly, but Indiana Democratic Party Chair Mike Schmuel says he doesn't believe the state is as lopsided politically as it currently seems.
With fair and sort of balanced competitive government, you actually get better outcomes. Is Indiana a little tilted rightward over the last few cycles? Yes. Is it going to stay that way forever? I don't think so.
Schmuel says his goal as state party chair is to make Democrats competitive at every level.
We need to get more Democrats running for office. We need to train them. We need to build up our county party infrastructures. Invest in those areas, organize in those communities.
That will require raising money, and Schmuel says he'll lean on his track record doing so in the Joe Donnelly and Pete Buttigieg campaigns.
John Schwanis, if you're an Indiana Democrat, does Mike Schmuel give you hope for the party's future?
Well, I think so. He has said the right things. In Mike Schmuel, you have somebody who has good academic credentials, as evidenced by his undergraduate and graduate degrees from Notre Dame. But more important, perhaps, for this job is his street smarts, the ability and sort of the winning strategy ability he has shown with campaigns with Joe Donnelly at the congressional level or Pete Buttigieg. Now, Pete Buttigieg didn't win the presidency, we know, but he certainly, I remember the first several months of the campaign, but we were all sitting here like, man, how is he sustaining such a campaign coming out of, you know, Northern Indiana. It just didn't make sense, and I presume that he has a lot to do with that. So it's a good package. I would also say his father, it's in the bloodline, is one of the smartest and nicest people I've ever met. He's a professor emeritus at Notre Dame of American Studies, which is, I think, is what they call journalism there. But a tremendous guy, and if it's in the blood, that if it's anything like his father, he's got that going for him too.
Nikki, talking to Mike Schmuel, is he saying the right things if you are an Indiana Democrat, at least?
Absolutely. I mean, he's focusing on strategy. He's focusing on raising money, recruiting candidates. Those are the two main things. He's trying to approach things differently as far as interacting with people. So I think bringing that fresh perspective is good for the party. And, you know, I'm betting maybe Secretary Pete Buttigieg might headline an event sometime soon. I'm just thinking that would be a home run.
There seems to be a connection there.
Yeah.
Arielle, you know Mike pretty well. Why is he the right person to lead the party right now?
Well, I mean, I've had the honor of being able to work alongside Mike for over a decade now. And coming off the Pete Buttigieg campaign, I had the honor of being the Indiana State Director. And so seeing our campaign go from a very small operation to also becoming one of the largest campaigns in political history, I've been able to single-handedly see not only his leadership, but the skills and the new tools that we were using in order to take my small town mayor and turned him into a top tier candidate and now to become the Department of Secretary of Transportation. So we've been able to see the difference in what digital organizing, digital tools can do, how you can raise money for somebody who may not be as well known, but you take them and you have a message, a very strong one. You have a team of folks that can not only just talk about relating to Democrats, but also can talk to Republicans and independents alike and get to the point of being able to get them behind not just the candidate, but the campaign and the people who are involved. And so I've been able to see the work that Mike can do, and I know that he is going to be exactly what the Democratic Party needs here in the state of Indiana.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine a presidential campaign working out better short of actually winning the presidency than I suppose Pete Buttigieg did in this last cycle. Mike O'Brien, are Mike Schmuel's goals realistic, this idea of making Indiana Democrats competitive at every level?
I don't know about every level. I mean, it's still a pretty lopsided margin. It's a big hill to climb. But, I mean, that Buttigieg campaign, I don't think there was a wrong decision made in it over the course of its life. So we can't sleep on this guy. He clearly knows what he's doing. He's framing the Democratic Party's situation well. I wish Ann were here because she tends to think, like, we lost, but we're right. And it's like, well, no one cares if you think you're right, you're losing, you know, and he's focused on the right pillars, if you will, of what a party.
She's been here because of sports metaphors. We know how she loves rebuilding a team, a franchise.
Right. And, you know, I've been in the State House for 21 years and for a long time, especially in the House of Representatives, going back from 88 to 2010, really. But the Democrats and Republicans had to be very disciplined in what the issues that they considered, how they talked about the issues facing Hoosiers. What I've discovered, and this is becoming a problem for the Republican Party in Indiana, we need to pay more attention to it, is that discipline that we had then that helped us win really tight seats and tough seats has not carried itself into these supermajorities in terms of the issues we picked to highlight and how we talk about them. So as Democrats try to become, those are the opportunities, I think, for Democrats in some of these seats. Redistricting matters. We'll talk about that in a second, and will influence the candidates and the competitiveness there. But Republicans can't sleep on this guy or the Democrats forever.
It's like I wrote that segue for you because Indiana House Republicans refused to debate a redistricting reform proposal this week using legislative procedure to block an amendment from House Democrats.
Democrats have long pushed for an independent commission to draw the state's legislative district lines. House Republicans used to support that, too, until the last few years. Democratic Representative Matt Pierce's amendment would see Indiana adopt the model used by Iowa for decades. The General Assembly's nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency would prepare maps for lawmakers to vote on. Pierce says LSA would have some guidelines, including what they couldn't consider.
And that is to use political data to draw the district. So they wouldn't be able to use election results, party affiliations of voters.
But House Republicans used a legislative maneuver to avoid debate or a vote on the amendment. They decided Pierce's proposal wasn't germane, relevant, to a 66-page long bill on election laws.
Nikki, Kelly, majorities of both parties have used this tactic to avoid debate on and votes on issues that they didn't want to debate or vote on. But did this one feel a little flimsier than usual?
Well, I'm certainly not going to lie. It was a pretty narrow interpretation of germaneness that I've seen in 3 years. And when you think, or 20 years, when you think about how wide that bill was, it covered three different titles in Indiana Code. But to be fair, it did not cover the title that redistricting is in, and that's what they, you know, really focused on. I think they've been very clear, though, for a decade that Republicans are not going to do redistricting reform. So I think their position is clear regardless of whether there was a vote there or not.
To that point, I think it was Representative Ed Delaney on the floor who said, we're used to losing, you know, we're prepared to do that, but we'd like to at least have the debate. So to that point, everybody knows how that vote would have gone if there had been an up and down vote on Matt Pierce's amendment. So why not at least have the debate? Why not at least have the vote?
I think it comes down to if you have the supermajority and you know that you're going to be able to draw the maps, it is a tempting, that's the prize, you know, to the victor go the spoils. And that's a valuable commodity. I'm guessing that if Democrats had a supermajority, they might not be as enthusiastic about reform. I think your zealousness about reform tends to be, there's a correlation or maybe an inverse correlation between that and where you stand in terms of your
power.
Membership, your power breakdown within the chamber. So, look at Republicans. You had House Republicans not that long ago who were very supportive of redistricting reform.
Including
now, granted,
former,
some of them are
including the former Speaker of the House.
Including the former Speaker of the House. Now, granted, some of these people are not there, but also being in control also sort of maybe clouds one's perspective
like the Democrats
a bit.
Democrats in the decade before them, the Republicans proposed redistricting reform.
Mike O'Brien, to that point, redistricting reform advocates constantly say the majority, a large majority of Hoosiers, want an independent body to draw these maps as much as it can without obviously having to change the Constitution, which is part of the issue Indiana has here. But it doesn't seem to be moving the needle on elections. So does it matter that a majority of Hoosiers want this?
I don't think so, because it's not a priority. I mean, the polls only matter if you're in the top three and it's swaying the middle in the, you know, in a competitive election. But I think what is always lost in this, and I've said this before, what is lost in this conversation, and we need to think about this in terms of Indiana's political history. If you look at the last decade, when Democrats drew the maps in 2001 in the House, it was narrow, right? It was two seats, one way or the other, all the way along. By the end of that decade, under those same maps, Republicans won a supermajority in the Senate and near supermajorities in the House, coming off of Mitch Daniels winning by 20 points in 2008. We don't have a House Democrat south of I-70, I don't think. We have one south of I-70. I think it's Matt Pierce.
A couple of them, because I think
Gooden just lost.
But the one down on the river.
So we don't have any. We don't have. We largely don't have all of those southern Indiana seats, especially along the Ohio River, flipped during the Obama years.
You're correct. Those weren't
redistricted that way. The party affiliation changed in that era. And that has to be noted. It is what has delivered these majorities, along with this new, you know, in the last 5 years, the new identity with Trump. Voters changed their party identity. It had nothing to do with drawing down a street. We had zero lawsuits coming out of redistricting we were one of the only states in the country to have that. There were hundreds of lawsuits filed against maps coming out of redistricting in 2011. We had zero in Indiana.
Does that undercut the argument for those who want redistricting reform, that it's hard to look at the supermajorities in the House and then see all of the other statewide election results that Republicans have won over the last decade and go, well, clearly these are terrible. So does that undercut the argument?
I think what we have to understand here is that Republicans have the opportunity to take real leadership to actually give the people what they're asking for, which is this independent commission that they've been asking for a while. And when everyday Hoosiers are looking at these maps, I mean, they're looking at the fact that not only are, you know, the maps drawn in their eyes in a way to be able to sway an election or to get somebody elected. And so we go into the conversation of gerrymandering, and we have to be able to address that too when we're looking at redistricting. And so in order for us to get to the point of kind of combating that narrative that is out there, I think the Republicans should step up. Take the leadership and give the people what they're asking for, which is giving this independent commission the opportunity to live and to thrive for us to make some decisions.
But does that narrative matter enough if voters aren't going to the voting booth with that on their minds?
That is definitely a good question that I myself can't even answer. And I think that the issue that we run into with that is that we still have voters trying to understand the difference between redistricting and what gerrymandering means. And I'll be very honest about that. And for voters right now, when you're feeling a sense of disenfranchisement when it comes to even having access to the ballot, I think we have to think about the fact that, like I said, Republicans have the opportunity to step into leadership and to not only give Hoosiers this independent commission, but we also have the opportunity to talk about how not only are voters not showing up sometimes, but we have to give them access to the ballot, too. And that's one issue that we're not talking about.
All right. Ryan Hatfield's the other one.
That's still not
and
it.
And I'm buddies with him.
That's still not all of it.
But I can't forget.
All right, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Arielle Brandy, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Stay safe, stay healthy, wear a mask, get your shot if you can, and join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.